With the Araisa, there's two different categories of ill people. One is Chayla Sheyesh Bei Sakana, whom we're Mechal Shabbos for, and the other is Chayla Sheyim Bei Sakana, whom we're not Mechal Shabbos. The Rabbanon, however, split it up into many, many subcategories. Some of them are Lahakel, and others are Lahachmir. Let me explain what I mean. With the Araisa, it would seem that every person who's a chayla sheyesh by sakana, so then you're supposed to be mechal al Shabbos entirely in order to save their life. The Rabbanon came along and perhaps imposed two limitations on chayla sheyesh by sakana. One limitation, which may not apply to all, but certainly applies to some, is the requirement to attempt to be mechal al Shabbos with a shinoi, to do something in a little bit different manner than usual before saving them. So, for instance, the example the Gemara gives on Kuf Chaf Pes Amud Beis is that if a woman is in the process of delivering and she needs oil in order to rub on her skin, that was considered therapeutic. So, rather than just carry a jug of oil through the Rishus HaRabim, the best thing to do, says the Gemara, if it's a little bit, so just bring it in your hands. If it's a little bit more, maybe bring it in, you know, soak the hair in oil and then wring it out of the hair in order to bring the oil. So that's a very big shinui. Why can't you just carry a jug? It seems to be that the Rabbanon either imposed or derived from the Torah an imposition that malacha not be done in a straight out manner if it's possible to accomplish the same objective with an equal probability of success by doing it in a more roundabout manner. So that seems to be one imposition that the Rabbanon made. Midiraisa, every chayla sheyesh by sakana is the same. The Rabbanon said, no, there are some people who are closer to sakana and other people who are further away from sakana, and when the chances of danger of death are lower, so therefore we're going to impose a few more requirements or a few more restrictions from Hilchos Shabbos. That's what emerges from Kuf Chaf Ches Amud Beis. It doesn't necessarily apply to all types of cholim, as the Magen Mishnah and the Meiri, which the Brewer brings it down, says it may only apply to yoldos, to women who are pregnant, who are very, very far away, meaning they're, if you can imagine, cholesh yesh bo sakana as a range of, you know, very close to death, high probability of death, to like right before we draw the threshold and say beyond this threshold the probability of death is not, it's so little that it's in bo sakana. So a yoledes is closer to the middle of the spectrum rather than closer to the edge, and therefore we were more machmir on a yoledes. Why is it that a yoledes is closer to the middle of the spectrum? Because says the Mishnah Brura, you find that its childbirth is not dangerous. So there's a whole movement called Planned Parenthood. The genesis of Planned Parenthood is that there was some woman, and she one time came into a house, and she saw a woman die in childbirth, and she had an epiphany that, oh my goodness, childbirth is so dangerous, so we better make sure that women don't have to get involved in this danger without their consent. But the Mishnah Brura says that it's echad mini aleph, that fewer than one in a thousand women die when a childbirth is properly handled. It's a natural process. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't make such a phenomenon in nature if it's going to kill so many people. So therefore, she's basically the lower end of the danger spectrum. It is pointed out that in some ways there's somebody who's lower than a yoledes, and that is someone who's hungry on Yom Kippur and claims that he's going to die if he doesn't get to eat. So the Gemara in Yuma says that a person who's hungry that way in Yom Kippur, the first thing you do, he says, I'm hungry, I need to eat, I must eat, you tell him, Yom Kippur, Yom Kippur. That's supposed to calm him down. Many people who feel that they're so hungry that they're in danger of dying, if they hear it's Yom Kippur, sometimes they can come with some sort of a turnaround. So we first tell him Yom Kippur, but this Yoledes, they point out, we don't tell her Shabbos, and hope that she can effect a turnaround, that she's not going to need the oil. We just bring her the oil right away. So it could be that someone who's hungry on Yom Kippur and claims that he's in danger of dying is a little bit more lenient, a little bit further from actual danger than a yoledes. In other ways, though, it seems that that chole is closer to danger. They point out that you don't have to necessarily do all the shinuyim that you make for a yoledes. You don't necessarily do for somebody who's too hungry on Yom Kippur and still says that he's going to die even after you tell him that it's Yom Kippur. So in some ways, a yoledes is closer. In other ways, a ra'iv on Yom Kippur is closer. And I think the idea is that Chazal said each, you know, illness has particular ways which are more effective to to cure it, and other ways which are less effective to cure it. And any time that a particular mahalich was not going to advance the cause of moving a person away from danger by so much, so maybe Chazal said, do it a little bit differently, do it a little bit more slowly. So that's one place where it seems to be that midir raisa cholesh yesh bo sakana, we would just be mechal al Shabbos. And Chazal came along and said, no, we should impose some restrictions. Tell him today is Yom Kippur. Tell him bring the oil derech shinoi, bring it in the hair, bring it in the hands without bringing it in its jug. So that's one place where it comes up. A second place where it comes up is on Kof Chav Tes Amud Aleph. The Gemara tells us that you're supposed to make a medura. If a woman, let me just take a step back. What are some common scenarios of women who need something on childbirth? So obviously, a woman who gave birth within 3 days before Yom Kippur, so if she needs to eat on Yom Kippur, that's something which, even if she says, I don't want to eat, I don't need to eat, we make her eat. The Paiskim say the reason is because sometimes a person's not connected with themselves. Rav Volbi has a beautiful piece on this in Ali Shur Chilek Beis, where he talks about the importance of regesh, the importance of feeling in Avodas Hashem. So he says, if you want to look, do a survey of all the places where feeling comes up in Shas, in Halacha, so he says, you find like three places where it comes up. One of them is it says, if a person does an Avera once, loy hirgish, twice, it's nasa like a heter. So the idea is that regesh is something which, it's a very, very fine feeling. Then the second place you find it is by Hilchos Nida. It says that if a woman has a hargasha, so then she's Tamei Nida Midi Araisa. If a woman sees blood without a hargasha, then according to many Paiskim, then she's not Tamei Nida Midi Araisa. So he says, but nowadays, if you go around and ask women, the physical Metzius is that most women do not have this sensation which Chazal described as a hargasha. He says, what's pshat? Pshat is that a regesh is something that you need a tremendous amount of internal awareness in order to have. And people nowadays just are lacking that degree of internal awareness. I remember when I was in Rabbi Willig's shiurim on Hilchos Nida, so he said that no women have this hargasha at all. Like, kemat, no women, and he quoted a tshuva Rebbe Yashiv that way. I asked my mother, who's a pediatrician, so she told me that she has some patients who have described hargasha. That's really the sheet of the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan says women still have hargashas nowadays, just that they're so busy and active and everything that they don't have the internal awareness to recognize when the hargasha happens. So the same thing, that it's something which has this feeling of needing a particular type of food in order to survive. It's something which is an internal hargasha. So the woman can say, no, I'm gonna fast on Yom Kippur. So we assume that the reason is because people don't have internal awareness. Even back in the times of Chazal, we made that assumption. A person within 3 days of childbirth, so we say she's just lacking that internal awareness, and we make her eat no matter what. So that's one of the common scenarios. Some other common scenarios are, let's say that it's in the middle of the summertime and there's no air conditioning. So the woman is very, very hot and she wants the air conditioner to be turned on in order that she can be comfortable. So then it would be mutter to turn the air conditioner on for her during the first 3 days, as long as someone's around and says, oh no, pregnant women need to have a normal temperature, they can't be schwitzing. So then you turn the air conditioner on during the later days. So then if she says, no, I don't need it, then we'll listen to her, meaning between days 3 and 7. But if she doesn't, then again, your hashara is, or you hear it from people who know that this is what pregnant women need, so then you can turn it on. During the winter time, let's say that some places, some apartment buildings are very well heated, other apartment buildings are not so well heated. If the building is not heated so well, so it can get cold in the apartment, even in the middle of the winter time. So you can get an electric heater. So she has an electric heater in the room, she says, I'm shivering. You can turn on the electric heater if it wasn't turned on before Shabbos. The less common example, which is the one which seems to be discussed most in the Rishonim, is the issue of cooking for her. The Rishonim seem to assume that women need freshly cooked food in order to survive. Cold food is not good. Old food is not good. It's got to be freshly cooked food. So the classic example is, she says, I need a hot dish, and the only dishes around are cold, so you're allowed to cook a hot dish for her. But nowadays, most people have chalent in their house, so it's not so common that a woman will desperately be in need of a hot dish and she won't have it. There's a challenge. So that's what most people would use if a woman needs a hot dish. Sometimes women have cravings. That's a little bit different. If she's craving a hot chocolate cake, so then you can probably bake her a hot chocolate cake within the first 3 days. So those are just some common examples. There's one other that I'll mention hopefully later. I don't want to go over time, but I think we still have 10 minutes. So So that's those are just some common examples. And again, everything is supposed to be done, number one, bishinui. It's supposed to be done in an unordinary way. So, I guess that if your wife is pregnant and you anticipate that she might have a craving for a hot chocolate cake on Shabbos, and you should practice on Erev Shabbos baking a hot chocolate cake with your elbows instead of with your hands, so that so that way you'll be able to do it on Shabbos with a shinoy. You won't have to do it the ordinary way. The other thing that they point out is that you're supposed to prepare everything possible from Erev Shabbos. So anything that you can anticipate needing on Shabbos for the purposes of the Yoledis, you're supposed to prepare on Erev Shabbos. So the most common example of this is packing a bag. Women, during the last 3 weeks before the due date, they usually have a bag packed with all of the things that they're going to need to take with them to the hospital, a robe, etc. And usually that includes, let's say, three pairs of clothing and three pairs because they stay in the hospital, however long it takes them to give birth, and then for one or two nights afterwards. So on Erev Shabbos, it's a good idea to take out two of those pairs, meaning you should only bring in one pair of clothing. You should empty the suitcase or the carry case of everything which is non-essential, because this is actually comes from a machlokas between the Rashba and the Ritva, also on Kuf Chav Chesam would be, is the Gemara says that she should bring the shemen in her hair. The first thing is to bring it in her hands, then to bring it in her hair, and then to bring it in a kli. She should tie the kli in her hair. So I forget the exact background, the nitty-gritty of this, but basically the Ritva says the following cheshbon: if you bring the shemen in a kli, so then some of the shemen is going to stick to the walls of the kli, so then that's going to go to waste. That's called riboy b'shiurim. If you bring it just in your hands or in your hair, so then less of the shemen is going to go to waste. All the shemen that you're bringing is going to go directly to the chola. So we have a case in the Gemara Yuma. What happens if you have, the chola needs one plum, the plums are hanging on a tree, one tree has one plum on one branch and another one has two plums on one branch. So you could cut off the branch with two plums. The Gemara says, no, better to cut off the branch with one plum, because the two plums is being marbe b'shiurim, even though the ma'isa and malacha is the same number. You're only doing one ma'isa talisha, one ma'isa of cutting off the branch, but you're being marbe b'shiurim, you're cutting off two plums on that one branch. So it's better to do the exact minimum shear. So when you have an option of carrying with more than necessary and the exact amount that's necessary, it's better to carry the exact amount that's necessary. So that's why it's better if you can prepare before Shabbos to only carry the exact amount that's necessary. Talis, tefillin, talis, do you even need to carry? You can wear the talis to the hospital. Maybe you're going to be in a rush. So you get into things like that. If a person's going to plan that he might need to call a car service, so he could either put the car service phone number on speed dial on his phone, so only has to press one button, or he'll have to press 10 buttons. So you should put the speed dial before, he should program the car service number into speed dial on Erev Shabbos. He may have to call the OBGYN, so program the OBGYN's phone number into the speed dial on Erev Shabbos. That way, Sefer Chassidim is the one who basically says this. It's do everything possible in advance to avoid Chilul Shabbos. That's a practical, nafkamina also that seems to emerge from this sugya about bringing the oil. I wanted to say the second chumra that the Rabbanan seem to impose on...
By the way, does that go under Rabbanan as well, the minimizing, or only the rises?
I don't know if it's a chova either way, but I think that it's a good thing to do both ways. Magen Avraham brings it down from the Sefer Chassidim. The Sefer Chassidim says, given that you're supposed to do it with the shinoi, so how much better if you don't have to do it at all? So the Rabbanon weren't gozer under Rabbanon's b'makom.
It's not necessarily gzer. If it's just an overlap of... It's not to protect that. It's not gzer if the second gzer is to protect that specifically. Yeah, here it's for in general, so maybe we could extend. It's called gzer.
There's a couple of different ways to get out of Gzera L'Gzera. You can say Kula Chad L'Gzerahi, which either means that it was legislated at the same time or was legislated because Yilo Ha Lo Kayim Ha. You wouldn't have the legislation that was needed if you didn't have the protective legislation. Tos will say that sometimes Chazal just made Gzera L'Gzera, no problem about it at all. Sometimes they didn't. Sometimes they did. The idea of Ein Gozer Gzera L'Gzera is a descriptive term rather than a predictive term, meaning that if you ever find that Chazal weren't gozer gzera l'gzera, you can say, oh, this was one of the situations where they didn't make gzera l'gzera. But it doesn't mean that there's some sort of a prohibition. I think the Mabit in Kriya Sefer, I heard once from Rabbi Neuberger, that the Mabit in Kriya Sefer says that, no, it's like a rule, that you're not allowed to be gozer gzero l'gzero, because the Torah says, lo sosifon, you're not allowed to add on. That requires that there be concrete differences between halachos d'oraisa and halachos d'rabbanon. So one of the differences is safek d'rabbanon l'hakel, safek d'oraisa l'hachmir. And another difference is that in gozer gzero l'gzero, whereas we are gozer gzero to protect the d'oraisa. That's what I heard from Rabbi Neuberger in the name of the Mabit. But Tosfos doesn't hold that way. Tosfos holds that the Rabbanon had no problem making zero like zero when they felt like it. And he says, we don't have the tools anymore to figure out when, you know, what's the pattern, yeah, when they did and when they didn't. So that's zero like zero. I'm not 100% sure. But in the end of the day, if a person didn't, if he didn't take out, you know, the three pairs of underwear and the three robes and everything else from the carrying case before Shabbos, and then his wife says, I need to go to the hospital right now, so then he's not supposed to take the time to pull everything out. He can just go with everything that's there. Sefer Chasidim says it's a good idea to take the stuff out before. There's a machlokas between Rabbi Schechter and Rav Asher Weiss. Actually, I wasn't planning to say this, but there is such a machlokas, and Shai Schechter told me about this when his wife was in labor. So Rabbi Schechter said that they should spend Shabbos within walking distance of the hospital. Not necessarily for her, but at least for him, that he shouldn't have to travel by car if he had to go on Shabbos. So he did, and he said that Rav Asher Weiss, whom he's very close with, basically like kept on making fun of him. He went three Shabbosos because his wife, you know, delivered a little bit later than the due date, and they spent, I think, three Shabbosos in this small neighborhood in Long Island, in order to be near the hospital. Next, he stayed, by the way, by a doctor, whom Rabbi Schechter gave the same psak, that if you're going to be a doctor, you may have a call on Shabbos, you need to live within walking distance of the hospital so that you don't do chillul Shabbos. This doctor moved to that community so that he can be within walking distance of the hospital. So that's a chumrah that seems to emerge from the Sefer Chasidim, like do what you can in order to minimize chillul Shabbos. I'm sure that this doctor is going to get so much schar in Shemayim, and I'm sure that it's a beautiful community also, but it's... it's an interesting way of deciding where to live. So Rav Asher Weiss, and I think that this is the Minhag HaOlam, is like Rav Asher Weiss, is that you don't necessarily need to go that far, meaning that a certain amount of inconvenience is acceptable in order to minimize the Chilul Shabbos, but beyond that amount of inconvenience already is like, I mean, in the end of the day, so there's a heter of Pikuach Nefesh, and it may only be Vibu Bishurim and all sorts of other things. So I'm going to spend the whole Shabbos in the hospital. It's also hard when a woman is going to be delivering, so it's hard for her to spend the whole Shabbos. You know, she's in the ninth month, and yeah, she's going to be spending Shabbos, with many Shabbos, maybe a guest in somebody else's house. It's very hard for the woman, so we may not want to do that to the woman who's potentially going to be a Yoledes, and she's going to be staying in a house which is unfamiliar to her. So that may also be a stronger Svara to be Mikel. I wanted to point out the second thing, which is the Gemara is a discussion about Medura, about building a fire for a Chola. So it says that you're supposed to make a Medura for a Yolades, even up until 30 days. The Gemara had two, said maybe only for a Yolades, but not for a regular Chola. And number two said the Gemara, maybe you only do this in the wintertime and not in the summertime. Then the Gemara said, no, that one or both or half of these qualifications are untrue, because we learn that you're supposed to make a medura for somebody who had hakazas dam, who had blood leaching, even in Tammuz, which is very hot. So most Rishonim, I think, learn that it means that we're just totally overturning both qualifications. You said that it's only for Yoledes and not for a Chola, but since we do it for someone who had blood leaching, so then we'll do it for any Chola also. And you said that it's only in the wintertime, but we see here that we do it for a person who had his blood leached out even in the summertime. So clearly we do it for everybody and at all times of year. That's how many Rishonim learn the Gemara. The Rambam seems to learn the Gemara a little bit differently. The Ravid, there's a whole discussion that maybe we're overturning half for only one of these different things. The Rambam Paskins here in Perek Beis of Hilchos Shabbos Halacha Yedalid, he says, Osin Medura L'chaya V'afilu Bimos Hachama, for a woman who gave birth, summertime, wintertime, both of those are okay. Aval Enos in Medura L'chola L'eschamim, but we don't make this Medura for a Chola regular. So it seems that he's upholding the qualification that it's only for a woman who gave birth and not for a regular Chola. But then he reverses himself and says, he kizdam in its tanner, and if he had his blood leached out and he got very cold, osin lo medura filo b'tekufas tamo. So it seems that the Rambam holds that a person who had hakazas dam is closer to a yolades, but a regular chola is further away from that. Again, this is another example of where, like, each chola has its own derech for refuah, and the rabbanon are going to impose certain things. Say, well, if the person's a regular chola, There's a big discussion, though, in the Rambam. Is he talking about Yesh Bo Sakana, or is he talking about Ein Bo Sakana? So the Magen Mishnah writes over here, he writes first that there's a machlokes about the Kavanas HaRambam, about whether the Rambam's talking about a chole sheyesh bo sakana, in which case it would be the following. A yoledes, even though after 7 days she's not considered to be bechezkas sakana, but legabe, being cold is a very big danger for her. So should we build her a fire? Because the particular yoledes, shenitztanina, is considered to be bechezkas sakana, but a chole who's very cold is not bechezkas sakana, but a person whose blood was leached out, he, if he gets very cold, is bechezkas sakana, and they're all talking about a chole sheyesh bo sakana, but a chole shein bo sakana, we're not going to build him any type of bonfire whatsoever. That's one way of reading the Rambam. A second way of reading the Rambam is to say that he's talking about ein bo sakana, because after all, yoledes after 7 days is chole she'ein bo sakana. So it's telling us that even though she's ein bo sakana, we're still going to build her this fire. And then a regular chole she'ein bo sakana we won't make a fire for, but chole she'yesh bo sakana we will make a fire for. And then someone who has a kazas dam also, even though ordinarily he's ein bo sakana, but here we're going to build him a fire, perhaps again because it's a sakana for him to be too cold. So what's the nafkamina for this? So the Magen Mishnah says, there's this machlokes about Pshat and the Rambam, and he says, "Ani mevatel dati mipnei dato." The Rebbe reads the Rambam one way, I would have read the Rambam a different way, but I'm being mevatel my das to the das of the Rebbe, and what's the raya that the Rebbe is right? Lefi, she'im hu she'yesh bo sakana. If the Rambam is discussing a chola she'yesh bo sakana, ha'mashma de'lechol tzarach of mechalal, and it's mashma elsewhere in the Rambam, that you do anything that they need. Afal pi she'in b'minias davar she'osin lo sakana, meaning a chola she'yesh bo sakana, there are certain things that you need to do in order to make him better, in order to take him away from the brink of death. There's other things that they're not going to make a difference in terms of whether he gets better or whether he won't get better, or they're less likely to make such a difference. And the Rambam seems to say that you even do those things for chole she'yesh bo sakana, meaning even something which has a very small or slight chance of diminishing the danger at all, we still do it because Shabbos is hutra for a chole she'yesh bo sakana. So the Magen Mishnah says, I'm mevatel my das from the Ravid. The Rambam here must be discussing a chole she'yesh bo sakana because it would be redundant. It would go without saying that a chol she'yesh bo sakana, we would do anything, whether it's going to decrease the chances of death or whether it's not going to decrease the chances of death. The Beis Yosi brings down that it's a machlokas, whether we do everything that a chol she'yesh bo sakana wants, whether or not it stands a chance of decreasing the chances of death or not. So what's going on when the Gemara says that we're going to light a ner, we're going to turn on the light for a woman who's blind, who's a yolades? We're going to turn on the light for her because we're worried that if she doesn't do this, she'll get nervous, and then getting nervous, she's going to be more in danger of death. So how do you understand that? Do you understand that someone who's getting nervous, they can die from nervousness, they can die from anxiety? So that's one way to understand that. And that way, turning on the light, which is going to take away her anxiety, is something which Chazal did based on their empirical or what, however they came to their conclusions, that this is something which is going to prevent her from dying. The same way that we find, let's say, by Matnas Shchemira, we say that if the Kenyan of a person is on his deathbed and he says, I want so-and-so to get this property and so-and-so to get that property, usually they would need to make some sort of a Kenyan, a Shtar, a Meshicha, a Hagbah, you know, whatever it is. And here, no Kenyan needed at all. Why, Rashi says, or the Rashbam? Because we're worried that if he's worried that we're not going to fulfill his wishes, that he's going to die from anxiety. So Chazal seemed to understand that there's a concern that anxiety can cause death. So the same thing, this woman, she's blind, maybe she'll hold up two fingers and say, how many fingers am I holding up? The person can't tell her, she'll say, oh, I'm anxious, and maybe you're going to trip over something, you won't be able to get me what I need fast enough, and then I'm going to die. And then that anxiety alone is enough to enough to kill her. So that's how to understand the Gemara about turning on the light if what you need is something that's literally going to decrease the chances of death. If that's the case, so then there's a big discussion. What about a doula? OBGYNs are the doctors who actually perform the delivery, so those are critical nowadays pretty much to have. There's a big discussion. Better to give birth in a hospital, better not to give birth in the hospital. There's such a thing as natural birth, so why do women go to the hospital? I know my mother is a pediatrician, says women go to the hospital so that if there's complications, that everything should be like in place, that you won't have to lose a moment in dealing with those complications. So is the OBGYN really necessary? No, but it's necessary to there's somebody there. There's cutting involved. There's a whole bunch of other things. So somebody needs to be there. So to call a doctor, that's really, you know, necessary. But there's something which just came out recently called a doula, which is a woman who practices meditation techniques with the woman who's giving birth. And a doula... So there's been a lot of conflicting studies about whether doulas actually empirically decrease the chances of a woman dying in childbirth. So there's been, it's not really clear that they directly decrease it, but maybe women who have doulas are less likely to need a C-section because they're able to dilate more widely, so the babies will come out the normal way and we won't have to cut them open. So, and C-sections are dangerous, so maybe it decreases the chance of C-sections, which decreases the chances of sakana. So there's a big empirical debate nowadays, which I don't think is 100% resolved, about whether doulas decrease the chances of sakana or not. So if you're going to say that a person who's yeshbo sakana, literally you need something which empirically decreases the chances of sakana, so then it depends on that empirical debate about whether a doula is going to empirically decrease the chances of sakana, and then how halacha defines a significant probability of empirically decreasing the chances of sakana. But if pshat in the Gemara by the light is just that we do anything for a cholesh yeshbo sakana, even though the cholesh yeshbo sakana does, it's not going to decrease the chances at all. But the fact is that, like the Magen Mishnah says, there's no danger to withhold that malacha that they ask us to do, but we do it for them anyhow. So then, lichaora, it would be mutter for a doula to come, the same way that it's mutter to turn on a light, so that she shouldn't get anxious. Aye, but being anxious is not going to kill her. So she's going to be more anxious without the doula. She wants a doula to come. Being anxious won't kill her, but we still are allowed to be mechal Shabbos. The doula then would be allowed to drive. The doula would be allowed malachas diaraisa in order to get there. I'm told the Rabbi Willig is matir doulas to drive to women who are giving birth, even on Shabbos. But Rabbi Neuberger is much more cautious about it in his fourth year halacha lemaisa shiurim. He's much more cautious. So these are, I think, the restrictions which Chazal imposed. Midiraisa, it seems, I think that this is how midiraisa, it seems that a cholesh sheyesh bo sakana, you do anything. And then the Chazal said, no, do a shinoi, tell him yom kippur hayoyim. You know, maybe this, you don't make a medura for a chola because the chances, you know, are less. Maybe you don't do something which is not going to decrease the chances of fatality significantly. These are all things which perhaps Chazal imposed as a gzera. If you have a safik about them, it's safik pikuach nefesh, so you've got to do them anyhow. But if you're vaday, that it's not going to, you know, change the possibility at all, the probability at all, so then you do them. I didn't even get up to all of the places, the Rabbanon, where we differentiate between different levels of cholim who are closer to sakana or further away from sakana, but I think I did use up my time. So, thank you very much.
Thank you.